Just before we get started, everyone, Titus O'Reilly here. You would have heard me saying we have Bazaar Plus, our membership program. If you'd like to join, you get a weekly bonus podcast. You get access to all the past bonus episodes. You get to vote on future episodes. You get early access to live show tickets, a fortnightly newsletter, a members-only chat room, all sorts of stuff. If you've got interest in becoming a Bazaar Plus member, look at the link in the show notes. We'd love to have you on board.
It's Sports Bazaar.
Get into it.
Some of these stories you would say that cannot be true.
I'm fine to us.
The hunt for the weirdest.
This is madness.
It's a masterclass in how not to do things.
The most air-brained scheme I've ever heard.
Strangers.
Oh, wow. You can't make this up.
Things are only going to get more bonkers.
Most unbelievable.
Most genius thing I've ever heard. You say evil. I say brilliant.
Stories to ever occur.
An unparalleled array of deadbeats.
A mecca for colourful characters.
In the world of sport.
Had a taste for testicle soup.
Can I just stop you for a second?
Don't act like you've never done this.
Sports Bazaar.
Opened his mouth and a sparrow flew out. Slept face down with a compass to make sure that his head was pointing north. He hit so many sixes into the members that they retreat into the bar.
I better lie down after that.
It's time for the leaders of the hunt.
It's 10 cent beer night at the ball bar.
It's Titus O'Reilly and Mick Malloy.
Welcome to the latest episode of Sports Bazaar with me, Mick Malloy, and of course, doing all the heavy lifting as usual, Titus O'Reilly. I'm still coming down after the slapshot edition.
The Jonestown, the Johnstown Jets, sorry. Jeez. I keep saying Jonestown because I think of the Jonestown Massacre.
Are you going to do an episode on that? Cult Bazaar?
It's going to be your cult bazaar.
Well, the bazaar's redundant. It's a cult.
Yeah, you don't have many cults that go, God, that was a boring cult.
Oh, mate, they weren't even trying, those folks. No one got castrated. There's no purple sneakers.
But no, that was a fun one. No, Ice Hockey's going to be a rich hunting ground for us.
I'm so happy that was based, that Slapshot, the movie, was based on a true story. It really makes me, I had no idea.
And the true story is as crazy
and the
as
Hanson
the movie.
Brothers are based real. On.
Yeah, it's jeez. Absolutely amazing.
Louise. All right, so what are we doing this week?
We often get asked, not just in this podcast, but in my books as well.
Yes.
So often my books are like crazy things that are happening in sport. And people say, oh, can you do more women athletes?
Yes.
And I always say, I want to, but women athletes don't behave as badly.
you make a good point.
I think equality is when we see our female athletes do terrible things. We've had some great news in this area.
We have,
Sam Kerr, because we're just recording this. Although, when I heard what she said,
oh my God,
which, like a white bastard or whatever, I'm like, that is a term of affection in my family. I didn't, like, I'm trying to get the.
Yeah, that's mild by comparison to some of the things I've been
called. She threw up in a cab, called someone a white bastard. I was like, she's just exporting Australian culture to other parts of the world.
She's had a shocker, but for a court case to go 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, on the
spectrum of things.
On a scale of 1 to 10, mate. And also, too, like, racism really kicks in when you're punching down or when you're vilifying a minority.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a racial
being
reference.
Being called white is not.
And who had the power in that relationship? It was a copper.
Yeah.
What a thin skin. He's embarrassed.
He's embarrassed
the entire force, well, that bloke.
What I love about it, too, is it's like, as a Melbourne Football Club supporter, if you're not Australian or don't follow footy, our stereotype is that we are rich and enjoy going skiing. So people will go to you, oh, going to your chalet? And I'm always like, this is the greatest insult anyone can ever give you. Like, you're rich and enjoy skiing. Like,
well, you got me.
Oh, you got me. These are like, so it fits into that category of it.
But
for
that
me.
Policeman, English policeman,
yeah.
going about his duty on night shift, that's not the worst thing he would have heard that day.
Oh,
how thin-skinned are you as a policeman doing the rounds and you get called out to someone's thrown up in a cab, we've got a 3-1-2 at 1 in the morning and you go, oh, my God, I wasn't prepared for that.
I know. I was talking to Jules Schiller, a friend of mine who hosts a breakfast program on ABC Radio in Adelaide, and they did talk back on it.
Yes.
And everyone ringing up was like emergency service workers and nurses going, if we all took everything we got caught at that level to court, no court cases would ever get heard because it would be clogged overnight. You know, they couldn't believe
it. I'm so glad it came out. I'm convinced the police were trying to protect that information.
Yes.
But this will never see the light of day.
We're not condoning it. Like, she's had a shocker.
She's had a shocker.
You know, and the
throwing
up in the cab.
Put your hand up if you haven't thrown up in the back of
it. But throwing up in the cab is the worst bit for me. Because that poor cab driver has to clean out his cab. Like, I feel sorry for him. Like, police officer got off lightly, you know? Like,
yeah.
But my point being about talking about that is we often get asked, will you do more women? And I'm always on the lookout. And I'm so hopeful with the growth of women's sport that we will see women athletes soon behaving incredibly. Well, there's Dawn Fraser stealing.
Dawn Fraser.
But even Dawn Fraser, that's about it. She stole a flag.
She stole a flag.
I mean, you compare her to Jimmy White. It's not close, right? Like,
right,
men are stupid.
He wouldn't waste his time on a flag.
Men are stupid, but I'm hopeful as the money comes in and women athletes get equality in being
put in themselves.
They get money and they get put in a bubble, and I have full faith that they're going to behave just as badly as the men, and we cannot wait. But we do have a female athlete.
You've done Tonya Harding.
We have done Tonya Nancy Kerrigan,
I can't see.
Now, today we're doing a female athlete, but on top of this, I would argue this is probably in the top 10 easily greatest athletes of all time, men or women.
Serena Williams?
No. Before Serena, before.
What are you talking about?
So the woman we're talking about today is a woman called Babe Didrikson.
If you go back to the 1890s again, I'm going to lose my mind.
No, well, we're going back to 1911 was when she was born.
Relatively modern.
Relatively modern.
And what'd she do?
Well, we're going to get into it because it's more what didn't she do. Right? She is amazing in every way.
I like her already.
So Babe was a nickname. She was born Mildred Ella Didrikson in June 26, 1911 in Port Arthur in Texas.
Right.
They had to move when she was four because in 1915 there was a thing called the Galveston Hurricane. It was a Category 4 hurricane. Now, remember, it's on that, the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah.
So when Katrina made landfall, it was a Category 3.
Yeah.
It had been a Category 5, but it was so big, it was where it did the damage. Mm. But this was a Category 4, huge storm, one of the biggest all time. It wipes out Port Arthur, Texas. Flattened it completely. So her family moved to Beaumont. Her parents were Norwegian immigrants. Her dad was a carpenter. His wife and her mum was an accomplished skier and skater in Norway. So she had some athletic kind of background.
In the bloodline.
Bloodline, right?
Why would you go from Norway to Texas?
They'd moved
that
over here.
That is completely nuts.
Yeah, I know. Slightly different.
I'm an accomplished skier and skater.
Where will we go?
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to where they ride horses in big hats.
There's no greater alpine winterland than Texas.
What did they do in Norway? That's what I'm...
Exactly.
They've gone a long way. Where will they never find us?
Knowing our show, they're probably fleeing moneylenders. That tends to be what a lot of them are. So she was the sixth of seven children. Dora, Nancy, Ollie, Lily, and Louie. Lily and Louie were twins. And Arthur was the youngest, who was nicknamed Bubba. Three of the older kids have been born in Norway, but the last lot have been born in Texas. She, from an early age, was an active child, right? She was a tomboy child.
Where's she in the chain?
She was the sixth out of the seventh, so second youngest.
So she's Texan-born.
Texan-born and bred, never knew anything different, grew up there. So she would run in the streets with the other kids, and she would start to develop her athletic skills because she was already very talented even from 5 years old athletically. And she would leap hedges to practice hurdles. She'd play baseball with the local boys. You know, and this is when women often didn't do a lot of sport.
I was going to say, 1911 or 15, wherever we are, there wasn't an abundance.
It was not a big thing. But
wasn't
she
encouraged.
No, and she would dress in boys' clothes. So she was a very tomboy-esque kind of thing. And so then this was seen as strange. But she was very popular. She would have no interest in jacks or hopscotch or all those sort of games that girls were expected to play. She had no interest in them whatsoever. Anything sort of girly, she was like, nah, I'm going to play baseball with the boys sort of thing.
Not happening.
Her dad was big into physical fitness and conditioning when that wasn't a thing. He was into weightlifting. He was into all this sort of running. So she got a lot of it from him. She'd do it with him. He built his own, because he was a carpenter, his own weightlifting gear with a broomstick and some flat irons. So they had like a homemade gym basically, right, which at the
time
was rare.
Gym.
Yeah, exactly. So she would use it all the time to strengthen her muscles, and it got to the point where it was known as her equipment, even though her dad built it for him.
Yeah.
She just took over it and would use it every day.
Fantastic.
So she was really into all of this. She'd got so into it, she'd race the streetcars, the sort of early trams of the day, often pulled by horses. She would race them on foot to try and build up her speed and try and beat them.
Jeez.
So she was doing all that sort of stuff. And so soon she's beating the boys of same age in foot races and all other sorts of games.
Yeah.
So while she's doing that, around the age of 12 or 13, she sort of became aware of the Olympic Games. And it was interesting at this time because she heard of them and loved them and said, told everyone from when she was about 13, I'm going to be the greatest athlete of all time. And they all laughed because at some point at this point, like, the Olympics barely let women into them.
This is a common thread. We interviewed Kathy Freeman the other day, and at the age of 10,
yeah,
she had something on her wall that said, you will be the greatest athlete in the world. Unbelievable.
That's my problem. I had nothing written on my wall.
My own goes, you must stop shoplifting from Brashers. That was
and
my mantra.
And you never did.
I never did.
They went broke. You said they broke.
I couldn't be taped.
So she's suddenly at this point where she's got this really strong view of what she wants to do.
Yeah.
But she doesn't really have idols or any reason to believe any of this is going to be true.
Can I just ask, what's the Olympics doing at this game? Because it's still pretty nutty around this time.
Yeah, remember.
We covered a couple of them. There was one in the south.
This is getting into the 20s. So there's 1904 St. Louis, which was a nightmare.
All over the shop.
Paris one was all over the shop. That was with the ones with the hot air balloons.
Go and visit those. Those episodes, if you haven't listened.
Absolutely. So it's all very much like, you know, we can get into some of this in a bit. Even a lot of the amateur sport organisations in the States at the time, around the time she was saying this, had just banned women from participating in a whole heap of sports. Okay. So she was really like way ahead of her time in this. She would play baseball against the boys, and she was both a powerhouse pitcher and hitter. So she was great at both. So much so that she'd hit so many home runs that all the boys she played with called her Babe after Babe Ruth.
Babe Ruth.
So that's where she gets she the became name from. Babe from for okay. life. So she goes to high school, Beaumont High
School.
Because
she liked hot dogs and it was a bit porky.
Yeah, it wasn't a reference to the movie. It was a bit before that. So she's never a strong student. She had to repeat eighth grade at one point. But she participated at Beaumont High School in every sport.
Yeah.
So baseball, basketball, swimming, tennis, volleyball, any sport that women were allowed to do, she would do.
Mm.
And by the age of 15, she was the high-scoring forward on the basketball team and doing incredibly well. They were called the Miss Royal Purples.
Sheesh.
They had better names back then for sporting teams.
That's a good name. The Miss Royal Purples. That should be the title of a film.
With her playing from when she started, from 1927 to 1930, they didn't lose a single game. And at one point she scored 76 points in a game.
On her own.
And this was when basketball wasn't high scoring. So she was just light years.
Could not be stopped.
Not
tamed,
be stopped. Whatever. Yeah. This goes unnoticed until a guy called Colonel Melvin Jackson McCombs comes to see her play.
Who's playing him in the movie?
I think this is your role. I can totally see you doing this.
Oh, wow.
So he's a former track star of the University of Missouri, and he was employed at the Dallas Employers Casualty Insurance Company. He's their athletics director.
For an insurance company?
Yeah. So what happened?
What's the point of that?
So what happened at the time was in America, and this is before college has really became the bedrock of sport.
Ah, so they were like
companies
pimped out to companies.
What the companies would do is they would enter teams into these, they were mainly amateur sport, into these big competitions, which were as kind of big like colleges now there. But instead, people went and watched the local teams that the local company would basically fund. And everyone had to be amateur. You weren't allowed to get paid for sport. So what they would do to get around it is they would hire you as a janitor or a receptionist or whatever, but then you would actually just play full time.
They're total ring-ins.
So,
which is what college then did anyway, didn't
the college
they?
Did anyway.
But study, yeah. Don't worry.
So the colonel, his technical job on paper was he was managing the farm and tornado divisions of the insurance company.
That'd be pretty straightforward, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but really he never did that at all. He just ran the teams, right? Yeah. And they had teams in everything, athletics, basketball, baseball, everything, right? It was like college sports program. They didn't pay the players directly.
You've got to love amateur sport.
Oh, yeah.
Really.
So they could enter the amateur athletic union competitions.
Yeah.
Now, the AAU was before the NCAA.
Sure.
And the NCAA and it fought it out in the 60s 50s and 60s as who's have control of amateur sport in the States.
Yes.
And the NCAA won.
And they're ruthless.
And they're ruthless. Oh, but yeah. Up until then, the AAU were way bigger. They were the main ones. So she's right. in that thing. And it's all companies in it mainly.
Okay.
So the AAU had been funded. One of the people who founded it, sorry, was James E. Sullivan. Now, you will remember James E. Sullivan from our 1904 St. Louis one.
He was all over the shop.
He was the one that came up with the marathon, won the marathon where they didn't give any drinks to anyone. But he also was the one that came up. Remember that one? So go back and listen to our 1904 St. Louis marathon episode.
Dropping like flies.
Yeah. So that one of our favourite episodes. But remember before that, as part of those Olympics, they had the Savage Olympics.
Mate, the Savage Olympics, that's where I thought you were going.
And he invented that too.
You need to explain that.
So just that was
quick
where...
Doesn't understand the horrific nature of the Savage
that one,
Olympics.
That one and James E. Sullivan, who started the AAU, the Amateur Athletics Union, because he was such big in sport, he was running the St. Louis Olympics. And they came up with an idea that let's create. Well, it's funny because it's so bonkers.
Well, it's
bonkers.
Funny because it's nuts.
It's so bonkers.
And it's
yeah.
not laughing with him.
No, no, not at all. He wasn't laughing. He was being deadly serious. He didn't even hide. Mate. He came out and said, look, what we're going to do is add the World's Fair there. We've got all these people from indigenous groups around the world. So we've got, you know, Inuits, you know, we've got
let's
Japanese people, we've got
cultures.
Yeah, we've got. Patagonia, people from Patagonia, we've got everything,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
Let's have them compete against white people to prove white people are superior. And they didn't hide it. That was like literally
that
what they
the
said.
That was the premise of the game.
Of the whole thing is that, but they wanted to actually create, not just have white people at the top. They thought it would create a racial hierarchy that they could like scientifically study and prove these guys are best at this.
His heart was in the right place.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. So anyway, that's the guy who created this. So he was doing all this sort of
stuff.
Please
go and have a go at that point. There's the detail. Yeah, 1904 St. Louis Olympics.
Yeah, I think
what goes on.
Oh, amazing. So the AAU also worked closely with the Olympic movement. So they were the ones that you, if you wanted to qualify for an Olympic sport, you went through the AAU.
Right.
So at this point in Babe's lifetime, the AAU had actually barred women from competing.
On what grounds?
It would damage their reproductive health. Jeez. They would not be able to have babies if they ran and jumped and did all this sort of stuff. Luckily,
a lot of these ideas haven't stood the test of time.
They have not stood the test of time.
They really.
In 1923, the AAU had only just allowed women back in. So this is 1930 when Babe's recruited.
Okay.
So, but
how remember, old is she now? Like,
oh, in the 17.
She's on the cusp of a great career
yeah.
in sports.
And so luckily for her, the timing's worked out. Colonel McCombs comes looking around. Now, because he looked after the tornado division on paper, his teams were called the Golden Cyclones.
Okay.
And the Golden Cyclones kept losing to their rival, the Sunoco Oilers, which was an oil company.
Yep.
And they were based in Dallas too. And they beat them for the AAU women's basketball title in 1929. The Cyclones had lost to the Oilers by a single point.
The Oilers would have had a bit of coin behind them.
They had
too,
a lot of money behind them. But so the insurance. So like these are the two. Oh, yeah. That's why they were the two
good
big
point.
Teams, right? And the Golden Cyclones kept losing to the Oilers all the time. So as well as losing the championship, he was looking for someone to get them over them. He was looking for talent. So he goes and hits the road and he ends up in Houston. Babe's nowhere near Houston. She's happening to be playing a high school team against Heights High School. Which right. they really didn't think of the name there.
That's the worst name I've heard today.
Yeah.
Everything else I've liked.
So Babe, in front of him, scores 26 points, wins the game for them, and the Colonel approaches her and says, come join us. You get $75 a month as a receptionist.
Oh, yeah.
You got to remember, this is 75 was a lot of money a month then, and it's the height of the Depression. It's 9:30.
Yeah.
So she was like,
she's not going to do a lot of typing, is she?
She's not going to, and she, you know, she's barely passed. She hasn't finished high school at this point. And so her parents say, great, let's skip the last few months of high school and you just go and do that.
Yeah, you're the breadwinner.
You're the breadwinner. Go do that. So she goes and does this. They beat the Sunoco in the Southern tournament early on. So she's instantly changing them straight away. They beat them quite handily. Then they get to the national tournament and the Cyclone and the Oilers are headed for a rematch. You know, it's a knockout tournament. It looks like they're going to face each other. But Sunoco are actually upset and Babe's squad wins and goes through and have to play another team. and she shoots the winning basket with 30 seconds to go and wins the national title.
Okay.
So she's just started her career. She's
burst onto the scene.
Burst onto the scene.
And has made a statement.
Yeah.
Right off the bat.
The rival teams all notice how good she is, which are all these companies. So she gets offered like hundreds of jobs at other companies.
They're like seagulls squabbling over a chip.
Yeah. They're like, so she's instantly not only like just started her career in basketball, she's like, you are the best player already. And you're like, you know, it's your rookie season. So she's getting this.
It's like the equivalent of a number one draft pick. Everyone's going, this is the. You want to land this talent.
And she's just won the national championship for them. So they're like in your rookie year. So they're like all wanting. While she's also doing this, she's also competing in sewing.
What do you mean competing?
So she won the sewing championship at the 1930 State Fair of Texas in Dallas. So she's just one of those people that whatever she does.
But how do you win that? Like, is it speed? Is it detail? Is it like a sweatshop atmosphere?
I think it's needle point. Yeah, it's a sweatshop.
Wow.
So she's one of those people that whatever she just turns her eye.
Is this freehand sewing or is this machine sewing?
I think it's freehand sewing.
Freehand.
Yeah. So she's winning everything.
At the time in America, that would have been, for women, that would have been more fiercely contested than basketball.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been I'm a third generation sewer. Yeah. For
my mum won it, my grandma won it.
I've been told since an early age that you get learn your sewing. Cross stitch?
Can you sew at all?
Absolutely.
Can you really?
Oh, no, I can't.
That's bad to say. That would be the most surprising thing you could ever tell me.
Sew up some stitches. That's about all I can.
You're more a crocheter.
I can macrame.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I make a good hanging basket. Macrame.
You're a man of many layers, Mick Malloy. Yeah.
You've got to get the right beads.
So, in 1930, while this is all going on, she hears news that the track and field events for women are to be added at the next Olympics in 1932. So 1932 Olympics are in LA. They're the ones where the Brazilian coffee ship went to.
Jesus.
Height of the Depression, remember? You know, it's another episode.
That was a foolhardy mission.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? Can I just say, so I'm showing my own ignorance here, but I would have thought that's late in the day for women's track and field, 1932.
They let them in occasionally before, but then dropped it. The women were in and out early.
That's incredible to me.
So the Baron, Pierre de Coubertin, who invented the modern Olympics, very non-racist, like saw the white men as not superior in athletics. And he said the black athletes will dominate in the future, he said.
Yes.
This is back in the 1904, he said that, right? So he was like, but weirdly, he was like, no one wants to see women compete. He actually said the way women can contribute to sport is by birthing great sons. So you can see why women
like
were
a broodmare. Your job is to be a broodmare and incubate some of the world's best
athletes. So he was not like a progressive guy. He was progressive in some ways, not in others. But so you can see why it took a long time. So suddenly in 1932, it's announced that women are going to be competing in track and field.
Yep.
She hears about this. She's got 2 years to prepare. And she goes, I'm going to do that. And the colonel says, well, that's fine. We've got track and field teams. And you're such a good natural athlete.
And segue into our...
You can do that as well as basketball.
As well.
Yeah. So she says, great. So the AAU decide that because they're the main athletics body, they say we're holding a qualifier for the Olympics. And it's in the year of the Olympics. This is 1932 now. And on July 15th and 16th, they say we're going to decide who the United States team is for the actual Olympics.
Yeah.
You got to show up. And companies entered teams. And so the colonel decides they would normally send like each company would send like a dozen women to compete and see which ones of them qualify in the different events.
Yeah.
The colonel decides that it would be great publicity to only send Babe, to send a one-woman team.
To the Olympics?
To the, Olympic qualifier. So every other company is sending like 12 women, right? He knew this would get like huge publicity, which it does. He said, go make us proud. So she goes and she competes in 8 of the 10 events.
Oh, wow.
She wins 5 outright, ties a 6. She sets world records in the high jump, the 80-meter hurdles, the javelin, and the baseball throw.
Good Lord.
Which was a competition back then. In just 3 hours of competition, she earned enough points by herself to win the medal for the best team.
Incredible.
So she wins.
She's the best team.
She's the best team. by herself in 3 hours. End up with 6 gold medals and 4
That's outrageous.
World records.
That
right?
is total domination.
So she ends up with 30 points from all her performances.
The other girls are shattered, right?
No one knew her that well. She was a basketballer, but no one knew her that well. The next team, second place team, which had 22 women in it, got 22 points. She got 30 on her own. So she's just dominated on the level. And this makes her famous. Suddenly she is like huge in the media.
So that's headlines. That's...
Everywhere. Front page everywhere. Like, we've uncovered this freak of nature.
The colonel would be wrapped.
Yeah, and it's the LA Games, so the interest in America is huge, right? She then is basically one of the most prominent members of the American team going in already.
Yeah.
Like, meanwhile, in basketball, she gets a pay increase to $90 a month.
Doesn't that make her a professional athlete?
No, because it's for a receptionist job.
Oh, receptionist, of course. Well, pardon me.
She's not thrilled with the money. She thinks she's worth more. And the cycling teammates are a bit annoyed with her because they start to feel that she doesn't adhere to strict notions of femininity. These are her own teammates.
Oh, right.
She has short hair. She often wears pants.
Good Lord.
This is becomes a real problem for her. Because this is not now.
So she's copying this from her own teammates.
Teammates and some in the media start to point
mean
out.
Mean girls. Sporting mean girls.
And they start to point out that she seems a bit manly in her behaviour.
Okay.
Right? There's no question of her being a man. They just I'm just saying it's not going down that path. That would be a twist. This was how confined and restrictive the world was then. Finally, it's time for the 32 Los Angeles Olympics. And a record 135 female athletes had come for this. She shows up on the train. She's 21 years old at this stage.
Yep.
And as she gets off, the media will confront her and she says, I am out to beat everybody in sight and that's just what I'm going to do. So she was like Muhammad Ali before Muhammad Ali. She did this all the time in her career. Yep. Her confidence and the way she talked before was always like,
sure,
I'm here to win. She used to go in and say...
She's a trash talker.
Yeah, and she used to go into the change room and say, who's coming second today? Right?
Oh, this is great. So she was, this is mental.
Yeah, she was doing mental disintegration before Steve Wuerl was. Her first event at the Games was the javelin throw. It's the first time the women's javelin ever been in the Olympics. Her first throw was 43.69 metres, a new world record straight away, and no one beat that for the rest of the comp. So
it's
she won
first
it.
Throw,
one,
it's over.
One throw, done. World record.
Hit the showers.
Hit the see you later. So when... She becomes the first ever female Olympic champion in the discipline, gold medal, right up. Now, women are only allowed to compete, they decide, in 3 events at the Olympics.
Who's making that rule?
Because they don't want to tire these poor women out. Baby's furious.
She's got big decisions to make.
Yeah.
So what's her events?
Her next one's the 80-meter hurdles, which she wins in a world record time. Another gold medal.
Yeah.
She got 2 straight away. In the high jump, she ties her teammate Jean Shilley for the world record, and both women are credited with the world record, but Babe gets a silver medal instead of a gold because they question her jumping style. It's the Fosbury flop, basically. It's where you go over backwards, which is now everyone does. She did a weird style. It was half straddle, half the flop, but they ruled it. And even at the time, everyone was like...
She's cleared the bar, dude.
And there's a sense that she's... If it had been a nice feminine athlete, they would have just gone fine.
Like given the options, let's give it to the hottie.
But they basically went, we don't want to encourage your type in a way, in their view, right? They let her have the silver medal. They count the world record as hers and her teammates because they both got it equal. And then they legalized that jumping thing immediately after the Olympics. They do give her credit for first place tie in Olympic record and it stands for 16 years, her and her teammates.
Yep.
So she's come away from the Olympics straight away with 2 gold and a silver.
She's probably chosen the wrong event.
And all world records.
Yeah.
And she probably could have. The real question Olympic historians ask now is how many could she have won if she was allowed to do it?
Dumb them. Rule.
She's the only track and field athlete, male or female, to this day who won individual Olympic medals in running, throwing and jumping events.
Yep.
So she's like total freak. This is when the press, some of them try and turn on her.
And why would they do that? She's an uppity woman.
She's an uppity woman. She doesn't conform to female standards of beauty at the time. So she dresses like more like a man and she has short hair. And she's very strong and fit because she's doing weights and running.
She's got
all the
attitude.
Time. And she's got attitude and she's confident and all this. And they don't like it. The unspoken thing in all of this is they all believe she was a lesbian.
Yes.
And they hated that too, but they couldn't write that out right.
But just so we're clear, and there was as much of this pressure coming from other women than as of men.
Well, society as a whole, I mean, yeah, there wasn't like an enlightened movement at the time or from anyone. So some of her teammates didn't like her for these reasons and some of the press didn't, but others did. Others ignored her, and we'll get to some. So, but an example is in the New York World Telegram, Joe Williams, who was a sports writer, said, it would be much better if she and her ilk, didn't say who her ilk were, stayed at home, got themselves prettied up and waited for the phone to ring. He literally wrote that in the paper. Jeez. Right? Thank now, you. While a lot of the athletic, the people running the athletics and some sports writers like that didn't like her, the public loved her. She was a winner. She was engaging. She was intelligent and she was funny. So that they were all like, better. So she finishes the Olympics a superstar, an absolute superstar. And not everyone hated her. Some of the sports writers absolutely loved her. They saw her for what she was, right? Now, there was a sports writer called Grant Land Rice, arguably is the most famous American sports writer of all time. When Bill Simmons at ESPN started a website, he called it Grantland after Grantland Rice. So that was sort of the stature. And even when he was alive, that was the stature he had. He wrote at the Olympics, she is beyond all belief until you see her perform. Then you will finally understand that you are looking at the most flawless section of muscle harmony, of complete mental and physical coordination the world of sports has ever seen. So that's what he wrote about her, right? Rice thought that she was so good. He bragged about her so much that people would say, like, what is she, your daughter? Like, because you're going. Yeah. Now, one day he's in the Olympic press box and she's competing in all these events. And he's saying how good she is to these three other sports journalists. And one of them recalled later on, he said, Granny told us that you simply could not think of a sport that Babe couldn't master. And one of them says, okay, what about golf then? Grantland Rice says, okay, and sends word down to Babe to come up and see him. And she comes up to the press box and they're all there. And he says, do you reckon you can play golf? And she goes, yeah, well, I reckon. Yeah. And he says, when
she hasn't given it a crack yet.
She's played briefly in high school, like very not professionally, just as a social thing. And he says to her, when can we play golf? And she says, well, how about tomorrow? She's in the middle of the Olympics. She says, what about tomorrow? They go, okay. And so her and these four sports writers go and play golf. And she carded a 91 and hit drives of 250 yards.
Mate, she's better than me. I've been playing all my life.
Exactly, right? So after the Olympics, she goes back to Dallas. They gave her a huge homecoming. There's a parade, a luncheon, civic events, all this sort of stuff. The Dallas Morning News describes it as a demonstration, this is her welcoming, the magnitude of which has never before been accorded a son or daughter of this city. They say it's bigger than when Charles Lindbergh came to his Dallas factory, who was one of the big stars.
Yeah.
So she's this big. Now, a problem emerges for her, though, where she is in an ad for a Dodge, the car. AAU ruled that this has breached her amateur status.
Right.
They don't like her because she doesn't conform to what they want. And she, therefore,
they want to take her down a peg or two.
So she's banished. So she can't return to the Golden Cyclones basketball.
She can't play Olympics.
Can't do Olympics. Can't play any amateur sport. Well, this is the problem, right? The company, the employer's casualty company in Texas, fire her.
Because she's no longer
used. She's not.
But what about her typing?
Yeah, exactly. And it becomes a number one story around America.
So she's basically been
totally nobbled. All right. This is what she's up against, right? Rather than whinging about it, she just, in an interview, she says, this is my last word concerning my suspension. So as far as I'm concerned, it is closed incident. Newspapers and the public must be tired of the whole business. I know I am. So she just doesn't complain, right?
Yep.
So there she's suddenly going, well, what am I going to do? She goes and plays some basketball in these professional ones that go and play.
Yes.
And she's making a bit of money through that. But she's 21 and she's got no money. It's the height of depression. She's wondering what she's going to do. At the height of depression, one of the things that had been hit the hardest was vaudeville. So the old comedy theater
musicals. Copped full frontal.
The Palace Theater in Chicago had been bought 6 years before this. So this is 1932.
Yeah.
In the height of the swinging 20s, when the roaring 20s were going on. There's money everywhere.
On fire.
So they built this, it was called the Palace Theater and it looked like a palace, right? they'd put all this money into it. And it used to have Mae West, Jimmy Durante, Sophie Tucker, Bob Hope, these people performing at it. But suddenly no one would buy a ticket. And so they'd have B-grade acts and no one would come. And they were like, we're going broke. And George P. Emerson, who was involved with it, he was an advertising man, he decided there might be one way to get vaudeville happening again.
What?
We'll get Babe to do a show.
And what's her show?
So he goes and approaches her and says, do you want to do a show? And she's like, I don't know. She says, I think it would be good. And they offer an enormous amount of money. And they announce, for 1 week only, Babe will appear on stage.
Doing what?
Well, no one knows, right? It sells out instantly. It seats 2,000 people. The all seven shows sell out overnight.
Okay, but I just want to know what's going on. What are they buying tickets to, mate?
They don't know at this point, right? There's a huge goal.
So this is like one of those, you know, freak circus things.
That's why everyone's like you going, what is she going to do?
Like the world's strongest woman or something, or is she?
Everyone goes, what is she going to do? How is this going to be good? She's a huge star. They're as much thinking this could be an abject failure. Well, is it going to be good, right?
You better cough it up.
So everyone's like, so they put a huge sign above the theatre, like neon sign in gold saying Babe. In the morning for the first matinee, there's a line around the block, 2,000 people trying to get in. Theatre lights dim, crowd goes quiet, the curtain comes up and the audience cheer, but Babe's not on stage.
Boo!
The spotlight goes
on. We want our money back.
The spotlight goes on this middle-aged man sitting at a baby grand piano, and it's a guy called George Libby, who's a vaudeville veteran. And they're all like, oh, what's going on? This we can't see it. And he gives them like this like half smile, like be patient kind of thing.
Wait your turn.
And he starts playing a little bit of music and this, and then he says,
this is fantastic.
Ladies and gentlemen, would you like to meet Babe? And the whole place just
that's why we're here.
Erupts, right? And they start clapping along to the music. So he's playing this jaunty tune and they're all clapping, clapping.
Can I just say, this is how we're going to start our live podcast from now on. We've got a guy on the baby grin.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, would you like to see Titus?
Yeah, exactly. You played piano. I'd like to see you play the baby piano in a white tail tux.
All right, so he's there. He's teasing the audience in a masterful fashion.
And he's like,
he's getting them up. I can't hear you. Would you like to see Babe?
Yeah. Goes nuts. And the place is all clapping. So that real clapping, right? Like
stomping.
Everyone's watching the stage. And then a voice comes from the back of the audience and goes, like, hello. And the whole audience turns around. And there's Babe standing there in the aisle. And the place erupts. She hasn't done anything. They just erupt.
What's she wearing?
Like, she had a long green, they call it a swagger coat, high heels shoes, and a Panama hat. Right?
Oh, hello. Welcome aboard, Babe.
She starts walking through the audience and she's chatting, but no one can hear her because the place is going nuts.
It's erupting.
It's erupting. And she walks down and she gets down to the stage. She beams and waves at everyone. She grabs this one of those like 30s oversized microphones, ones with the like, and she says, as I was saying, and the whole place laughs, like they just love it. She's like a natural, right? Like she's just fantastic. Her charisma's just off the stage, right? Piano player starts asking her a few questions, she answers, and then he starts playing a popular tune called Fit as a Fiddle and Ready for Love. She raises the microphone to her lips and begins singing the song.
Yes.
And she's not bad.
She's okay. She on top of the piano.
They say her voice was
Baker Boy style.
No, but she's standing next to it. And they said her voice was smooth, on key, and remarkably buoyant. She even dropped in an improvised boop boop a dee dee. So she's doing jazz.
That would have bought the house down.
The house is just because they all thought it could be a flop, right? So there's the relief that, oh, this is actually quite
she's
fun,
all right.
Right?
She knows what she's doing.
And she starts putting on an exaggerated baritone at one stage. They're all loving it. The crowd stands on their feet and applauds.
Oh, she's getting a standing ovation. She's got game.
She's got game, right? She kicks off her high heels.
What?
And slips on some track shoes, right? And everyone's like loving it. She peels off her coat and she's got a red, white and blue Olympic team warm-up jacket with USA written on it and satin shorts.
Oh, wow.
Right? They bring out a treadmill and she jumps on the treadmill and she's running.
That will never happen in our live show.
That would never happen and outside the live show. Now, behind her, there's a big clock like a stop clock.
Right.
And she's running and chatting, and then another woman comes on stage.
Now she's just running on a treadmill.
Yeah, and chatting. And then another woman comes out and gets on another treadmill, and they have a race on the treadmills.
Wow.
Right? Of course, this goes on and Babe, of course, wins, right? And the crowd all cheer, and she does a victory lap on stage with her fists above her head. She then gets out a golf club, and they give her a bunch of plastic golf balls, and she starts hitting them into the audience, and people are going nuts trying to grab us the souvenirs.
It's bedlam, man.
Yeah, it's absolute bedlam. So they're all lunging around.
It's like a T-shirt cannon or something, you know, people. It's great.
The crowd are like going, more tricks, more tricks. And she's looking off the side stage and there's a sign there and it usually has the name of the current act on it and it had her name. And then George, the piano player, says, "What are you looking at, babe?" And she says, "Oh, I'm just looking to see who the hell's on." And the crowd just love it, right? So she's doing all this.
She's doing a shtick patter and a bit of impro.
Someone off stage tosses her a harmonica.
Oh, this will be interesting.
And she played Jackass Blues. When Irish Eyes Are Smiling and Begin the Bagoon, and her harmonica is apparently great, and she's singing as well. So she's doing songs and singing and playing harmonica.
Early Bob Dylan.
Right? She's on stage for just 18 minutes, but it establishes her as vaudeville's brightest star. 18 minutes.
Jeez.
Bit different back then.
Yeah.
The next day in the Chicago Daily Tribune, a stage critic wrote, "Friday afternoon was the Babe's first time behind footlights, and the girl from the Lone Star State took the hurdle as gallantly as she ever did on the track." Asked about the harmonica, a journalist said, "Is there anything you don't play?" And she said, "Yeah, dolls."
Oh, she's got a bit of lip.
She's got a great lip. Attitude. I love it.
That's great.
So Babe is paid $1,000 for these first run of shows, which at the time is huge amounts of money. She's doing 4 or 5 performances every day. But at the time, most women are making 6 cents an hour. So it's huge amounts in the height of the Depression, right? Yeah. It became so successful that Jack Dempsey, the former heavyweight boxing champion, came to see it, and she suddenly is scheduled to go and perform in Manhattan and Brooklyn as well.
Taking the show on the road.
Yep, and her pay goes up, so she's making like $3,000 a week. It's just going up and up and up.
Wow, she's made it.
And they reckon she helped reinvigorate vaudeville.
Vaudeville. It's track and field's loss, amateur sports loss.
Yeah,
how's that? They killed the goose.
Yeah, she releases several songs on Mercury Records. Her biggest seller was "I Felt a Little Teardrop." It's a combination of her singing and playing harmonica, so she's selling albums and stuff, right? But she decides at this point she wants to get back into sport. She's like, "I love this, but it's not me.
Right.
This is my long time thing." And she could have kept doing it and made a whole lot of money. But she decides the next thing is she challenges a woman called Ruth McGuinness to a billiards competition. And pool was huge in the day, right? Pool wasn't like it is now where it's like a bit of a sort of if you were a top pool player in America at the time, you were like a huge star. You're a huge star. You would be in the New York Times in the front, not the sport pages. Yeah. And so Ruth McGuinness was like this huge star. They decide to have a competition and it gets huge interest, but McGuinness ends up beating Babe 40-62 in a 6-day match. And Babe realizes, I need to get a sport that's
Not about athleticism necessarily, is it? Like there is a skill attached.
So she's desperate to try and find a next sport. And so in March 1934, she turns to baseball as a means of earning cash. She joins major league teams, proper major league men's teams, in spring training as a publicity stunt to get people to come to the ballpark.
How did that go
down? To come along. She's technically the first woman ever to pitch for a major league team. She pitched 3 different games. On March 20, she gave up 1 walk and no hits in 1
competition?
Innings. Yeah, against for the Philadelphia Athletics against the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Yeah. Jesus.
So she did well. On March 22nd, she pitched the first innings for the St. Louis Cardinals against the Boston Red Sox. The Red Sox in that score 3 runs against her. On March 25, she plays for the New Orleans Pelicans against the Cleveland Indians, and she pitches 2 scoreless innings and then has a hit and hits a huge bomb, but it gets caught on the outfield. And so she does okay.
It's incredible. I wouldn't have thought that would be allowed. I thought someone would have gone, there's no way.
Baseball was like keen to attract people and this is the Depression. So they were like, it's spring training, so it wasn't the official matches. Right. like pre-season. Okay. Yeah. There's a team called the House of David. They're a barnstorming team. They send money back to Jewish communities. And it's men, but they're very good, and they tour for like 30 years in the States, and they go and play. And this is when there's a lot of amateurs, but they play professionally. And they're sort of like a Harlem Globetrotters, but they're
just
serious
a
team.
Entertainment style, the circus is coming to town. And
she plays with them, makes a lot of money. Burley Grimes of the Cardinals, who's on their pitching staff, says that if she was a boy, she would be one of the best prospects in baseball. He said, I've watched her. She is so good. She said she's a wonder of the athletic world, and I reckon she could play baseball full-time if she really wanted to. So at this point, Babe's sort of done everything, and she starts looking for, though, what she can do and play in her own right. She considers tennis, and the tennis community reject her outright.
Why?
Because they think she's too manly. They suspect she's a lesbian and she's too cocky.
But do they – is that – surely you've got to say why. You can't
– they don't say why. They just freeze her out.
No thanks.
Yeah, it was a different time. So in 1933, Babe makes a decision. She decides that she's going to make a career in golf.
Okay.
And we might leave it there and come
Let's
back next week.
Oh.
Because what she does in golf – probably tops almost everything she's done so far.
I'm loving this story.
And gets crazier because she meets her husband, who happens to be a professional wrestler.
Oh, you know how to whet an appetite. I'm enjoying this story a lot, and I'm just full of love and affection for her. I can't wait to see where this goes. I'm on her side. All right, see you for Ep 2.
If you're interested in more of Mick and I talking complete and utter nonsense, we have the Bazaar Plus members program. If you love Sports Bazaar, this gives you an extra weekly bonus podcast on top of the one you get anyway. You get access to all those previous bonus podcasts as well. You get a newsletter every fortnight. You get access to the chat room. You get the ability to vote on future episodes as well. And importantly, you get early access to any live shows we're doing. You get that before everyone else. If you're interested, the link is in the show notes.